This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
In British Columbia, 6.4% of workers, 120,400 working people, earn only the minimum wage. And BC's minimum wage earners are not only teens or young people trying to gain experience. In fact, 47% of minimum wage earners in British Columbia are aged 25 or older, and nearly 10,000 of those workers are over 55. Low-wage workers are also predominantly women, nearly two-thirds of them, and 55% of minimum wage workers have worked in their jobs for at least a year.
The British Columbia Federation of Labour is now calling on the BC government to increase minimum wage from its current rate of just over $10 to a full $15 per hour. The group says that an increase to $15 is not the end point, but an important start to ensure British Columbia's lowest paid workers get the lift that they need. I spoke with Irene Lansinger earlier this week. She's the president of the BC Federation of Labour.
Columbia's minimum wage compare to similar wages elsewhere in Canada?
We're behind. We're eighth behind Ontario, Nunavut, the Yukon, Manitoba, Nova Scotia, Quebec, PEI, and we're tied with Newfoundland and Labrador.
What are some of the misconceptions and misunderstandings about the minimum wage?
One big misconception is there's a whole bunch of them. One is that only young people work at minimum wage, that it's students living in their parents' basement. This is simply not true. Almost 50% of minimum wage workers are over 25. 63% of minimum wage workers are women. There's 10,000 workers working at minimum wage who are over 55. The minimum wage workers cover a broad spectrum of the public. And so these are people who are trying to raise families, look after their kids, survive themselves on poverty wages. The other thing people may not realize is that the $10.25 an hour or $9 server wage, so not everybody makes $10.25, we still have a server wage of $9 an hour. Anybody working at that wage rate is living in poverty. They're working full-time and living in poverty. In fact, $15 an hour, which is our campaign, lifts people just a little bit above the poverty line. So people working at minimum wage are thousands of dollars below the poverty line. They are the working poor, as we sometimes say.
As you've mentioned, the BC Federation of Labour is asking for an increase in the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Why now, and is there room to move above that?
We're focusing on $15 an hour because the minimum wage hasn't been raised for 30 months, almost 3 years. We're well behind. You know, we should have regular increases to the minimum wage. And so we need a pretty significant increase, as I said, to lift people above poverty. But we've also seen other jurisdictions, you know, commit to a $15 minimum wage very successfully. Seattle, SeaTac, San Francisco, parts of the hospitality industry in Los Angeles, all along the West Coast, we are seeing a push and a commitment by other cities to a $15 minimum wage. So we say it can be done, and it should be done here.
What stands in the way of increasing the minimum wage?
Well, the minimum wage gets increased when the provincial government decides to do it. So that's one of the major obstacles. We will be lobbying the government on this issue. We will be talking to the premier about it. We will be going to the legislature in March to lobby on this issue in the hope of convincing the provincial government to make a dramatic increase to the minimum wage. And so that's the main obstacle. There is a lot of public support for a minimum wage. We've done some polling, and it's around 80% of the public supports an immediate and very significant increase to the minimum wage.
Do you differentiate between minimum wage and living wage?
Yes, definitely. A minimum wage is not a living wage. The living wage is calculated on the basis of a family. It's about $20.10 an hour, I believe, in Vancouver now. And so, really, we do support the idea that everybody should earn a living wage, but we recognize that there are some steps to getting there, and one of those steps is to have an increase to the minimum wage. And the difference between the living wage and the minimum wage is that the minimum wage is legislated, and it's part of the employment standards, and people have to pay it. It's a requirement. And the living wage, we ask employers or the organization that runs the living wage campaign asks employers to commit to that voluntarily, so there's no requirement. So while the living wage is important and we think employers should commit to it and we agree that everybody should earn a living wage, there's actual legislation that governs the minimum wage. We would love to move to a system where the minimum wage is a living wage and they're the same, and that's a long-term goal for sure, but the first step for that, we say, is a $15 minimum wage.
What are some of the activities that are planned for this particular campaign, and how can people from across the province participate in this?
We're doing lots of things. We are having an event every 15th of the month because there's a kind of symmetry to the 15. It's 2015. We're asking for a $15 minimum wage, and so we have an activity every month on the 15th of the month. So watch out for that. They're posted on the BC Fed website and on Facebook. You can find out about those events. We had a great rally yesterday where three women, all low-wage workers, spoke about their struggles to earn minimum wage. We hand out materials at SkyTrain stations, and we try to get, and other areas where there's lots of traffic, and we try to get the public involved in this campaign and signing a petition. So if you want to be involved in those events or plan an event like that in your community, there's a group organizing in Nanaimo, I hear, so watch out for that. Go to our website or call our office here at the BC Fed, and we have a staff person assigned to the campaign, and she's eager to work with anybody across the province who wants to start an event in their community or get the campaign going in their community.
Irene Lansinger, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
No problem.
That was Irene Lansinger, president of the British Columbia Federation of Labor. The BC Fed has launched a campaign called Fight for 15. Activities and meetings will be held that advocate for a rise in the province's minimum wage from just over $10 an hour to $15 an hour. You can find the campaign online at fightfor15.ca.
One of the well-repeated arguments against increases in minimum wages is the belief that it will lead to economic problems for small businesses or that economic activity will be negatively affected. Jim Stanford is an economist working with Uniform. Now, that's Canada's largest private sector union. He spoke to those concerns in a video interview for the British Columbia Federation of Labor. You can find the video on YouTube, but we've got the audio for you here today.
I'm Jim Stanford. I'm an economist, and I work for Unifor, Canada's largest union in the private sector. The biggest argument you run into with any campaign to raise the minimum wage is the claim by small business owners and other lobbyists that if you do that, you'll eliminate thousands and thousands of jobs. They'll say you'll actually hurt the people that you're trying to help, that young people and others who often work for minimum wages will be priced out of the market and they'll become unemployed. So this is a long-standing claim. There's a lot of debate in economic literature about whether that argument is valid or not. And we decided to test the argument by looking at historical data from Canada's labor market going back to 1983 to see if we could find any empirical evidence that higher minimum wages hurt your chances of finding a job. Well, the traditional arguments you hear are that labor is like anything else in the world. If it costs more, you'll buy less of it. You know, if the price of widescreen TVs goes up, well, you'll be less likely to buy a widescreen TV. And the same argument, they say, applies to workers. If workers are more expensive, then employers will buy less of them. That argument's very flawed because no company buys a worker just for the sake of having a worker around. they buy a worker, or in essence hire a worker, pay them for their labor, because they want that person to produce something that they're then going to sell to consumers who are demanding whatever it is that the company is producing. So employers never use labor for its own sake. In economic terminology, the demand for labor is derived based on how much demand there is for the product that the workers are producing. So the traditional idea that just increasing wages means you're going to hire less workers is actually not theoretically valid. And we wanted to test whether there was any empirical evidence for it as well. Well, we went looking for any empirical evidence that higher minimum wages hurt employment with a very, very broad net, if you like. We looked at historical data in Canada from all 10 provinces, so 10 different provinces, going back to 1983, and we considered 7 different labor market indicators in each of those 10 provinces, including rates of employment growth, unemployment. We looked at employment indicators for young people, and we also looked in particular low-wage sectors like retail and hospitality. So we cast the net very, very widely looking for empirical evidence, and in essence we didn't find any. We conducted a series of 70 different statistical regressions on the economic data, and in 90% of the cases we found no connection whatsoever between higher minimum wages and employment levels. And in the remaining cases, the remaining 10%, the evidence was split. In half of the cases we found that higher minimum wages actually helped employment, and in the other half, they seem to hurt employment. But the overwhelming finding was that minimum wages are irrelevant to employment. And that shouldn't be surprising because, again, when an employer hires someone, it's not for its own sake. They're hiring them to produce something that they want to sell. And what really drives employment is whether there's purchasing power in the economy to buy the stuff that workers make. Well, we also included in our statistical investigations a measure of the purchasing power of the consumer market, if you like, proxied by the level of economic growth in each of the provinces that we studied. And consistently, we found that the level of purchasing power, or the demand, if you like, for what workers produce, was a strong and dominant explanation of how many new jobs were created. So if the purchasing power is out there and people have money to spend, businesses will meet that demand, and they will hire workers to produce the goods and services that they're selling. That's the very strong evidence. Anything that affects the level of purchasing power in the Canadian economy will affect employment levels. That could include government policies around budgets and austerity. It could include how strongly businesses are investing to grow, grow their production. It could include our exports and how well our exports are doing based on the dollar, based on the state of the world economy. It can even include, and this is interesting, wages themselves. Remember, most Canadians depend on wages for their spending power. So paying higher wages to somebody might look bad for a business, but think about it. It means that those workers, and hopefully millions more as well, have got more money to spend. And particularly in sectors like hospitality and retail, they're totally dependent on consumer spending power. So that's where higher wages, including higher minimum wages, can actually help business more than it hurts them. BC's got a very bad record at lagging behind the rest of the country on minimum wages. Of course, the minimum wage was frozen here for many years. Then the government finally increased it a bit, but now they're lagging behind again. And that really undermines the living standards of low-wage workers, not just those working for the legal minimum itself, but even people who work for wages that are slightly higher than the minimum wage. Their wages tend to follow the minimum wage. So if there's no change in the minimum wage, then people who are making a little bit above the minimum wage don't get a raise either. So there's lots of BC workers whose incomes have been stagnant because the minimum wage hasn't been increased. That undermines their quality of life. It also undermines spending power. It undermines tax revenues for the provincial government. All kinds of social economic damage that comes from the failure to increase the minimum wage here. There's lots of debate, of course, in terms of what is an appropriate target to aim for with the minimum wage. Clearly, it has to be higher than it is. We'd certainly like to see the minimum wage be high enough to take someone past the poverty line. Surely, work should get you out of poverty. Work shouldn't keep you trapped in poverty. Unfortunately, decisions around changing the minimum wage tend to be pretty ad hoc, and they tend to be quite politicized. Based on, however a government feels the winds are blowing in any given year? Are they going to be listening more to workers who aren't making enough money? Or are they going to be listening to businesses who are saying, no, 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 keep the wages as low as possible? So that ad hoc nature is one of the problems. So at a minimum, we clearly need to have annual increases in the minimum wage at least to keep up with consumer price inflation. But even that's not enough. If the minimum wage is really low to start with, then indexing it to inflation just keeps it low in real spending power terms. So at a minimum, we should be adjusting it upward every year. And then hopefully we should have larger adjustments on top of inflation to reflect the fact that the minimum wage is too low to start with. Freezing wages, especially for the lowest paid people in society, isn't going to create any work. In fact, it will undermine employment precisely because it hurts spending power among consumers here. If you were serious about reducing unemployment, then you got to look at that issue of the overall level of purchasing power in our economy. And government can do a lot directly and indirectly to get more money flowing through the economy, more spending power, and more job creation. So they can start with their own budgets. Instead of laying off thousands of civil servants and cutting public services, they should be growing them. We clearly need more public investment in infrastructure, public transit, other types of infrastructure that we've ignored for years. We also need, I think, more successful business strategies in some of our key industries. Instead of just cutting corporate taxes and hoping that companies will expand, that hasn't worked very well. We should have more proactive strategies in some of our key industries, like resources, so that we add value to our resources here instead of just exporting raw extracted product. In some of our value-added industries, high-value service industries, tourism, etc. There's a lot that government can do to foster more job creation in those sectors as well.
Jim Stanford is an economist with Unifor, the union formed from the merger of the Canadian Auto Workers and the Communication, Energy, and Paper Workers Unions. He has a PhD in economics from the New School for Social Research in New York and also holds economics degrees from Cambridge University and the University of Calgary. The video, Dispelling Minimum Wage Mythology, was published on December 1st, 2014, and it can be found on the British Columbia Federation of Labor's YouTube channel.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.